Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today we're talking to Dr. Gerard Giannoli. Dr. Giannoli is an ENT, ear, nose, and throat specialist, otolaryngologist, who is sharing with us some of his concerns about direction that medicine is taking in the U.S. In part one, we took a look at electronic medical records, pros and cons. In part two, I'd like to elaborate a little bit on the forces that are eroding the quality of medical care in the U.S., because it turns out that Dr. Giannoli is interested in the problem of physician burnout. What's happening on that front, Dr. Giannoli?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My wife is a gynecologist, and she was doing continuing medical education program on the computer, and it talked about burnout. And as she was going through it, she realized that virtually all of the factors that lead to burnout did not apply to either her or to me, because we had opted out of the system, and we're basically what we call third-party free physicians. We don't have any contracts with Medicare or third insurance companies, and we strictly deal with our own patients. We give them a claim form, and the patients deal with their own insurance companies. And it's tremendously reduced the bureaucracy at our offices and the stress level. And so it made me wonder, well, gosh, you know, I wonder what the comparison of the burnout is between physicians who have opted out of the system versus those who are in it. And as we talked in our earlier podcast, one of the big problems is the mandated requirements by Medicare on the electronic medical records. Well, Mayo had done a study on, a huge study on burnout among physicians recently, and what they found was over half of physicians are currently exhibiting at least one sign of burnout.
And what would some of those be? How does that manifest?
Well, basically, not feeling like you're doing something that's useful with yourselves, not connecting with your patients, being depersonalized. The patients are not really people to them. They're more like things, you know, just loss of enjoyment of your work, not having a good life-work balance, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
It can also lead to depression and suicide. But they had done this study with almost 7,000 doctors responding to the study, and they had done it previously in 2011. And what they found was in 2011 it was 45%, and in 2014 it was 54%.
So the majority.
So they've seen an uptick.
Yeah.
So now it's currently majority of physicians out there, you know, are exhibiting at least some signs of burnout. I was going to say the other interesting factor I thought in there was 7% of physicians had suicidal ideation, which was a little shocking to me. I didn't realize it was that high, but that's pretty substantial.
Wow.
And to give you an idea, as far as burnout in the general public, it's 28% for burnout compared to 54%. So it's roughly twice the number of physicians that are exhibiting burnout compared to the general population.
And I heard a grim statistic recently is that the annual toll in terms of physician suicide is the equivalent of one average medical school class. So that would be 175 or 200 per year. And that's very, very sad because it's so hard to study to become a medical student, and it's so expensive to educate doctors. I mean, literally, society subsidizes doctor education to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars each year. So to take these gifted people and subject them to stresses which ultimately cause them to take their lives, I mean, it's not always the case that it's the patient interaction burnout that is the proximate cause of their suicide. But it does contribute, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. There's been a lot of press in the last several years about suicides among the military.
Yes.
And that there's been an elevated incidence of suicide among our veterans, which is, you know, certainly a travesty. But if you look at the incidence of suicide among the military, it's still lower than what we're seeing among physicians.
Wow. That's
and no
sad.
One's saying anything about physician right. suicide.
Well, I guess we're just not a we're an endangered species, but we haven't garnered protected status yet. Okay. I guess that's a sad state of affairs. So there's also the phenomenon of short of killing themselves, there's a lot of doctors dropping out. You know, doctors are seeking early retirement in droves, and it's particularly, I think, I don't know how old you are, but I think doctors in my generation and slightly older are finding the new conditions of medicine, the new demands of medicine, all this, standardization, electronic medical records and bureaucratization. They're finding it, it's sort of taken the enjoyment out of medicine. It's too daunting, and they're saying, I want out.
Absolutely, and actually, I wrote an editorial for the Wall Street Journal last year mm-hmm. that came out, and basically, I talked about this and doctors getting out of the system. About 10, 15 years ago, I saw where medicine was going, my partner and I kept telling everybody, the future physicians are going to have three options. They're either going to become employees of a big hospital corporation, they're going to get out of medicine entirely and retire, or they're going to go to a third-party free system like we adopted. And that's, in fact, what's happened. And I think it's going to move more in that direction as we go forward. Right now, when we opted out of the system, less than 1% of physicians had some sort of cash-based practice. As of 2014, it's up to about 7.5%. And with another 13.5% anticipating doing similarly in the next few years. Whereas, of course, the bulk of them have left private practice to become employees.
Right. And that's actually, when I get together with my medical school class, I went to Albert Einstein College of Medicine in late 70s, early 80s. And we have class reunions. And I noticed that among my classmates, the vast majority of them who started out in private practice in small physician offices, independent physicians, have joined hospital practices. That's the trend. And I asked them, how do you like it? And most of them, they really enjoy medicine. They're really very happy about their decision to go into medicine. But they say it's less fun. They say it's less, they have less autonomy. They have less discretion. They more feel like they're not the captains of their fate.
Absolutely. I mean, I will tell you the when we opted out of the system and became third party free practice, that was the biggest surprise to me, is how much more fun it was to practice medicine mm-hmm. once you got rid of all the bureaucratic burdens. Unfortunately, the doctors that have become employees, they've gotten rid of some of the bureaucratic burdens, but they've then also gotten a corporate boss. And that adds a whole nother stress level, and they still have to deal with a lot of the Medicare mandates and such that really does reduce the patient-physician interaction, which is really the main thing that makes medicine fun, is getting to know your patients and helping them get better, which is what we physicians derive pleasure from.
And also being, to some extent, being a master of your own schedule and to be able to have the flexibility to see patients the requisite amount of time that's necessary, rather than being subject to, in effect, a quota, because when payments are capitated, you almost tend to, it forces doctors to undertake sort of an assembly line approach, because
absolutely, my brother-in-law, to give you an example, my brother-in-law is a urologist in the Boston area, and he went to work for a hospital system that he no longer works for, but he said someone was in the office there with him with a stopwatch. And, after he saw a patient, said, you took 10 minutes to see that patient. You really should be able to do it in 8 minutes.
Right.
And that is happening around the country.
It affects certain fields, especially. I was talking to a psychiatrist, socially. Doctors at parties, as they gravitate to one another. You're a doctor. Okay, you're a doctor. And pretty soon, you start talking, and within minutes, you're complaining. You're sort of commiserating with one another. Have you noticed that? And the psychiatrist...
Yeah, the other place is the surgeon's lounge.
Exactly. Right. So, or for me, maybe medical conventions. But I spoke to a psychiatrist who said, things have changed so much in the field of psychiatry. I used to see patients, and we used to really do psychiatry. I would talk to the patient, I would analyze their problem, and then I would prescribe, if necessary, appropriate medication. Then I'd say, you know, come back in a couple of weeks, or, you know, set up regular psychiatry sessions. He said, finally, his office manager told him that he was going to go bankrupt. This is no way to run a practice because the reimbursements were too low. So he completely revamped his practice, decided he would never talk to a patient about any kind of psychiatric problem. That is basically he became a psychopharmacologist, only prescribing medications. That way he could see 30 or 40 patients a day, because it doesn't take that long to review a patient's condition and then prescribe, you know, a psychiatric drug. And the money's rolling in, and the office manager is happy, and he's solvent. You know, that completely changed the character of his practice, probably to the detriment of his patients.
I've seen the same thing with some of the psychiatrists here too, and it's been one of these things. They really have no choice if they want to survive. They have to adapt to this new model. But we've also seen that with other aspects of medicine, where physicians cannot spend time with patients, because if you spend time, you're going to go bankrupt, because you are not paid for your time. You're paid for the number of visits you do. Mm-hmm. And any of the new models that have been proposed are not going to make this any better. In fact, it's going to make things worse for the patients.
Indeed. Okay, we managed to spend this entire interview, part one and part two, without saying the O word, Obamacare. but it's inevitable. What's today's intelligent medicine call to action for patients and perhaps you know, physicians who are listening in, who are saying, hey, you know, tell me about this you know, a third party option?
Well, the biggest problem with Obamacare is it was supposed to make things more affordable and improve access. And it really has not done either. If anything, it's made things more expensive and has reduced access. All this talk about more people that are covered by insurance is really just nonsense, because all the people that are now covered by insurance are people mostly that are on Medicaid, and these are people that would have qualified for Medicaid before Obamacare but just never applied because they didn't need to. So it really has not done much from the standpoint of any functional benefit to our society. It raised the cost of medical insurance significantly.
Oh,
and
yeah.
One of the things that just drives me crazy is they talk about, well, what are you going to, if you repeal Obamacare, what are you going to do with coverage
exactly.
of all these people?
Yeah, it's like,
and the reality is, coverage does not mean health care. You know, people got health care before that didn't have insurance. And it's going to be the same if you get rid of it as well.
Right. Well, okay, so what would be an alternative? What do you see as the ideal system? You seem to, because you're really at the top of the food chain in terms of the very special procedures that you administer, you're able to step outside the system. But what about, you know, some primary care doctor in an urban setting whose patients can't pay cash on the barrelhead for the services?
Well, the reality is the majority of physicians who have gone into cash-based practices or third-party free practices like myself are actually primary care physicians. I'm actually in the minority among specialty physicians doing this. And what you find with the primary care physicians is once they get rid of all the insurance contracts and such, they get rid of a lot of their overhead and can significantly reduce their overhead to where they don't have to charge very much on a cash basis to patients. And there's a number of these direct primary care practices out there that charge very little for office visits, and they're able to make a decent living. I mean, now granted, the physicians aren't going to make as much money as if they're on the insurance program, but they're going to make a nice living, and they're going to be able to provide good health care that is affordable to even indigent patients.
Mm-hmm.
They
can set their rates. They can make a decision. See, right now you can't even charge different rates for different patients. It's all the same. So you're not permitted to discount patients.
Right. Worse than that, you can't give away free
yes,
care.
Exactly.
For some patients, if they're inside Medicare, you can't get. It's illegal to actually do free care.
Wow.
For those patients.
Talk about a perverse incentive. Wow. So.
Absolutely.
So actually, you are a member of an organization called AAPS. Tell us about AAPS.
Yeah, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. It's been around since, I want to say, the 1940s. And it's an organization that, in my mind, is the only medical organization that's really working toward two things that I find near and dear to my heart. One is the maintenance of the patient-physician relationship, which currently is being torn asunder by all the insurance contracts and by Obamacare. The other is free market medicine, which I think will lead to higher quality and lower cost care. First, the free market medicine. A lot of people kind of, you know, poo-poo free market medicine, saying, you know, we've had free market and it doesn't work. The reality is we've not had a free market in medicine since the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only thing that is a true free market are people like myself that are outside the system, mm-hmm. and things like refractive eye surgery. You know, think about LASIK
right.
surgery. 10 years ago, it was a lot more expensive, and the quality wasn't as good. Now, it's lower cost mm-hmm. and higher quality, and that's the free market, and that's what works, how
exactly.
the free market works.
It's outside the realm of insurance.
Exactly. Same thing for cosmetic surgery. It improves competition, which then leads to price wars, and it causes increased quality and reduced cost. When you've got the third-party payment system, it does the exact opposite. It drives up costs and reduces quality, like we're seeing with the office visits, what we talked about. I think a good proxy for quality of office visits is the amount of time you spend with the patient. And that, we've seen, has gone down over time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So AAPSonline.org is the website for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. It's a voice for private physicians, and Dr. Ginoli is a role model for the way things that could be. Also, I just want to give mention to the fact that you are renowned for your diagnostic skills and your treatments for complex inner ear problems. So tell us about your practice.
Well, thank you. The easy way to say it, the specialty is neuro-otology and skull-based surgery, but I just tell patients that I deal with deafness and dizziness, which is pretty much the majority of my practice. And, you know, one of the reasons why I can survive outside of the system dealing with this is because the inside the system, they pay so poorly for patients that have vertigo. Such that most of my colleagues who, and this is our field, we deal with vertigo, they don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
They will say either they're not going to take care of vertigo patients, I don't do that. And then some of them that will, they'll say, okay, I'll see vertigo patients, but I'll only see one or two a week. So
mm-hmm.
they'll limit them.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them.
A lot of them,
they go bankrupt. Exactly.
Yeah. There's so many.
And then the third thing they'll do is, they'll say, okay, we'll see all the vertigo patients, and then they'll hire a nurse practitioner or a PA who then sees all the dizzy patients. And not to say anything bad about nurse practitioners or PAs, but we're talking about one of the more complex things we deal with in medicine, and these people don't have the same kind of training to be able to evaluate these folks.
Indeed.
So consequently, if somebody really wants to get better, they got to come see somebody like me, and
okay.
that's how I can survive.
And let's give a shout-out to your website. It's www.earandbalance.net, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
sir. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us, and appreciate very much sharing your perspective on a big problem, because we can talk about all the great medical innovations here on Intelligent Medicine, but if the delivery system is flawed, people aren't going to be able to access them. So thanks for joining us today. Dr. Gerard
Thank you,
Ginoli.
Dr. Hoffman. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.